G'day, team. I hope you are absolutely fabulous. You know why? Because I care. It's just how I roll. Now, the other day, and by the other day, I mean, yeah, it was probably a week or two ago, let's be honest. I chatted with Gareth and Sean from the Home Vitality podcast, two young lads from Britain who were, I'm going to say, delightful, interesting, curious, and a bit of fun. We had a lovely chat for an hour or so, and this that you're about to hear is what we call in podcast world a co-share. So this is that chat from then with them. Love your guts. I hope you enjoy it.
Mr. Craig Harper, how are you, sir? Are you well? How is sunny Melbourne today?
Well, Melbourne is not so sunny. It's nighttime now. It's been a little sunny, but it's midwinter, so it's cool, but it's... skies were blue today, so that is a good thing. And in answer to the first question, I'm good. Thank you, boys.
Good man, good man. Gaz, how are you, sir?
I'm still recovering after the beating in the garage, Sean.
Still, that was weeks ago.
I'd just like to say thank you for that.
Do you want to add a bit of context to Craig? Because he's going to think, what on earth's going on here?
Just for Craig, me and Sean do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and Sean's got his own garage gym. So I'll go around there, and Sean basically uses me as a grappling dummy.
A garage.
When I first saw you, that's what sprang to mind. I'm like, that dude looks like a grappling dummy. And I was so surprised when you spoke, because I'm like, fucking hell, this must be the latest version.
You're such a good judge of character. That's exactly.
How long have you boys been, or Sean, how long have you been doing BJJ?
I've been doing BJJ now for around 3 years, but COVID sort of put a bit of a blocker on that. So gyms closed down in the UK for nearly a year, almost from March 2020 to March, April-ish 2021. But as Gaz said, I had a garage gym, so I managed to train throughout. So I've been sharpening my tools while everyone's been out of the gym. So hopefully when I go back, I'll be treating Gaz as grappling dummies and everyone else, hopefully.
Yeah, have you, I tell you what, now I know this is not really the protocol of the show, but have you listened to the recent podcast with Lex Fridman and John Donoher?
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. How amazing was that podcast?
John Donoher, just, I try and listen to everything that man says. I try and consume as much as I can from him. When he's on the Joe Rogan podcast as well, he's incredible. Love listening to that guy.
Because it's like this intersection of science, strategy, engineering, psychology, high performance, sport. That dude is straight up genius.
Absolutely. There's a few people that I actively seek out to listen to. He's one of them. Naval Ravikant. Have you heard of that guy?
Mm.
He's another. Yeah. Josh Waitzkin is another on the Tim Ferriss podcast. Those three guys, if they're doing anything, I try and make sure I consume and listen to those guys.
Well, good for you.
So coming to the show today, Craig, and I don't usually start on a huge question like this, but I'm sure you've got this in your wheelhouse. The title of today's show is going to be, we'll see, The Human Experience. And I'm not going to go right at the blocks and say what's the meaning of life, but in a roundabout way, I am. So what to you, Craig, is the human experience? What is this all about, and what is health, success, happiness? What is all of this to you?
That's 26 questions, dude. Come on, mate. Come on. You know it's Saturday night. I told you go easy.
Yeah, you did say go easy, but I thought, you've got this, Craig. You were pumped before the show. I saw you get up for it, and I thought, we'll go straight in.
Okay, so, all right. So they are good questions. Let me break it down a little bit. So let me start by saying, when we say what is the human experience, obviously there is we're talking singular, right? Yeah. So I don't think there is the human experience. I think there are a multitude of human experiences. And what is the meaning of life? I think the better question, although that's probably the most often asked question in the history of, humanity, really, what's the meaning of life, or what's my purpose? I think the better question is, what's the meaning of my life? I personally don't think there's any pre-designated, preordained, single purpose for all humans other than to live and exist. I think we get given an opportunity, and then what we do with those years, with that, you know, wherever we're born, whoever we are, whatever we're given in terms of genetics and intelligence and resources and creativity and opportunity. And, you know, I think it's up to us what we do with that. I think that we like to think that there's some great noble meaning that we are meant to discover and find under some kind of cosmic rock or existential door or something. I don't know that it's that. I kind of think you go, here you go, mate, here's a life, here's 80 years or so. Have a crack, see what you learn, figure it out. I think for me, you know, it's been an evolution of learning and falling down and fucking up and getting up and making mistakes and overcoming my own bullshit and trying to figure out what I am and what I'm not. And the human experience is, it is a multitude of things, but you think about this, I call the dichotomy of the human experience is that we live in two worlds. So there's the world that we live in, or we exist in two worlds, the world we live in, which is, you know, like the room I'm in right now is physical. The rooms you guys are in are physical. So there's a physical three-dimensional world of other humans and cars and business and the government and weather and COVID and family and bank balance and bills and traffic lights and pollution and nature. There's all that external stuff that we exist in. And then there's all the stuff that exists in us. So the world in us. And the world in us is, you know, thoughts and ideas and creativity and joy and pain and suffering and hope and purpose and values and faith and belief and love and kindness and, you know, curiosity. There's all that internal stuff. Mm-hmm. So I started at it as an exercise scientist working with bodies, and then I eventually graduated to the humans that live in the bodies. So I'm really fascinated about the human experience from a cognitive and emotional and social perspective, which is what kind of my research is in.
Oh, yeah. Guys, anything to add on that?
Is there a spiritual aspect to that, Craig?
There is for me, but there doesn't need to be for everyone. And I think spirituality is like, again, it means different things to different people. And one of the funny things about, you know, you even think about, I don't know how many people listen to your show, but let's just say 1,000 people or 10,000, but let's just pick a number, 1,000 people listen to this show. So what's common is us three, in that the common stimulus is three blokes, one podcast. They're getting the same information, the same voices, the same stimulus, but none of those 1,000 listeners are having an identical experience. And you go, well, if they're all listening to the same thing, the same words, the same message by the same blokes with the same intention, why is everyone having a unique experience? Why is everyone in a different reality in relation to this? And the answer is because we create our own reality. We create our own experiences, which is why somebody listening to these words right now can be confused. Someone else can be enlightened. Someone else can be curious. Someone else can be inspired. And someone else can be saying, I already knew that. What's next? Right? Same stimulus, different reaction. So when something happens to Sean and Sean goes, fucking hell, that was terrifying. And I go, nah, I actually thought that was interesting. And Gareth goes, nah, I thought that was funny. Nobody's wrong. Like, we're all right for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so this is to understand the disconnect between what's in me and what am I in. So the seen world, the physical seen, and the unseen non-physical world.
Love it. Yeah.
So for me, spirituality is it's you know, it's that stuff that I don't really understand that, you know, I'm a scientist and I'm a researcher. I'm doing my doctorate. So when we talk about spirituality from a scientific or an analytical or an observable point of view, it doesn't make sense in inverted commas. But that doesn't mean it's not real. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, doesn't mean it doesn't exist or it's not real. It just doesn't make sense to us based on what we understand. And I've had experiences, and I'm not weird and wacky, but I've had experiences that to me are inexplicable, but nonetheless it's coming from somewhere. So I'm not a weirdo. I don't dress in a, although I wouldn't mind a caftan. I might get a caftan actually now that I think of it. But, you know, I'm not, I used to be religious when I was young. I grew up in a very religious household, which, you know, everything affects you, like we've all been programmed. But, and I know I'm banging on too long, but yeah. So the answer is I'm kind of spiritual, but it depends on what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just rewinding a little bit there, Craig, you mentioned that you started working with bodies and then evolved, if you like, or went on your journey, and now you're interested in the person inside the body. How did that come about? What was the evolution for you in progressing through your life? And now that you've found something that you're really interested in, what's your plans for the future with this?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. All right, so... So maybe a little bit of context. So I was a fat kid, like I was a morbidly obese kid. So I had body issues, self-esteem issues, you know, all that kind of stuff that a lot of fat kids have. So I was quite obsessed with and insecure about my body, my appearance, my weight, all of that stuff. So I started exercising like a maniac when I was 14, and that really hasn't stopped. I'm a little bit more sensible and less emotional about it now. So the curiosity around how bodies work and, you know, performance on a physical level, look, feel, function, performance on a physical level, that was born out of being a fat kid who hated the body that he lived in. That was the genesis. Then I started to work in gyms before I went to university. I started to work in gyms as what we call over here a gym instructor or a fitness instructor. And I kind of, in a direct answer to your question, Sean, probably about a year or two in, so maybe I was 19 or 20 and I'd written a bunch of programs for people and taught a lot of people how to squat and deadlift and whatever, you know, set the treadmill or set the bike or, you know, use kettlebells or whatever it was. And spoken to people about their goals and spoken to people a little bit about their diet or their sleep or their lifestyle or their, you know, whatever. But I realized that after a while, a lot of people that join just don't keep coming. And people with good genetics and good potential and good resources, and they've got a gym membership and they've got a reason to come. They've told me the reason. They've got goals. They've got, and now they've got a program, and I've given them a structure and I've educated them and I'm supporting them, and then they don't come. And this wasn't a few people. This is most. And so back in the day when I started, the average active gym membership in Australia was very low, which meant there were quite a lot of members, but not a lot of members that came consistently. Or, and some, quite a lot, that didn't come at all, despite the fact that they were paid up members. And I'm thinking, and even now, a bunch of my friends own gyms, and the amount of people who are spending, you know, in Australian dollars anyway, like $18 or $20 a week on a gym membership that they never go to and keep paying that is incredibly high. It's a very high percentage. And it's because people are always about to do it next week. They're always about to start. So I thought, what's interesting is the physiology, the anatomy, all of that, you know, how do we get strong, run fast, lose weight, change body composition? But more fascinating to me over time was, why do people keep giving up? Why do people keep stopping? Why do they set goals and not follow through? Why do they waste their time and potential? Why do they make excuses? Why has this person gotten in and out of shape? And no judgment in this, just curious. I was literally curious. why has this person got in and out of shape 37 times? And what's the role of motivation? What's the role of discipline and structure and organization, accountability? And how come the person with not great genetics gets awesome results and the person with better genetics sometimes gets crap results? And the person with a cheer squad fails and the person who's grinding it out by themselves succeeds sometimes. What's that about? So, you know, for me, I figured I wrote my first book 20 years ago and it was called, it's a terrible name, but it's called Fattitude. And it was about the psychology of getting in shape, not the physiology. And so I was fascinated with that.
Awesome. And that led you into the psychology of it all.
Yeah.
We can branch this out into life in general and making change. In your opinion, Craig, and from your experience working with people, what are the key skills you believe are needed in order to make sustainable, lasting change? Like you say, it's okay to make a change and get in and out of shape 37 times, but what is required to make a change and maintain that change?
Again, a good question. Okay, so I'm going to merge skills with attributes.
Yep.
So some of them are skills and some of them are just personal attributes.
Straight out the Danaher textbook.
So these are really fundamental. So change is hard.
Agreed.
Change is hard. Lasting change is hard. You know, like Gareth, you grappling with Sean, he's better than you, right?
Yeah.
So he kicks the shit out of you. Well, you can't get better without him kicking the shit out of you and choking you.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody starts as a brown belt, right? Everybody starts as a white belt, and you can't get good at what you don't do. But the truth is, very few people will persevere for long enough to become a black belt, not because they don't, and a black belt in anything, and I'm using that literally and metaphorically, not because it's impossible, but because it's fucking hard. It's just hard and it sucks. You know, doing a PhD sucks. Writing a book sucks. Building a business and a brand, fuck off, right? So, you know, it's just hard. And people want the shortcut, the quick fix, the magic pill. You know, this is what people want. People want the reward without the journey. And this is getting worse, in my opinion. So what makes the difference? One of the differences is, will you get uncomfortable consistently? And if the answer is no, then you're not getting there. The end. Nobody's becoming a black belt easily, right? What belt are you, Sean?
I'm blue, but just on a side note to this, I train with a brown belt every week and he does to me what I do to Gareth. He kicks my ass every week.
You probably deserve it, you fuck. So you're welcome.
Thanks.
And I'm glad you get the shit kicked out of you because it's character building, right?
And I enjoy it. Exactly, it is character building. I find personal growth in it.
Mm. Well, and this is what people don't understand, right? Both of you getting the shit kicked out of you literally and metaphorically is awesome for who you're becoming, because you're not just becoming a skilled martial artist, you're becoming a different person, mm-hmm. right? And that's what interests me more. Like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it's my favorite martial art, right? I'm fascinated because it's, you know, it's this merging of science and strategy and psychology and physiology and brutality, and it's fucking awesome, right? A controlled brutality. But that you know, whether or not it's getting in shape, losing some weight, or whether or not it's becoming the black belt, or whether or not it's, you know, overcoming an addiction, the thing is, our willingness to get uncomfortable and do what most people want is paramount. It's paramount because what we're trying to do is we're trying to change our operating system. We're trying to create a new default setting. So, you know, one of the challenges is, like, people think getting in shape, a lot of people think getting in shape and staying in shape is about motivation and inspiration. But I'm going to tell you that that is wrong. In my experience, my observation, of which my experience and observation is nearly 40 years of working with people in this space,
And the reason I say that is because motivation comes and goes. So motivation in the context of this conversation, motivation is an emotional state that we get in, we get pumped, we get excited, we listen to someone speak, or we see an event, or it's a sunny day, or whatever, something happens and we feel inspired and motivated, or we join a gym, we're excited, but 3 weeks later, we're not excited. 4 weeks later, the motivation has gone and now I'm not going. And it's not because I don't have genetic potential. It's not because I don't have time. It's not because I don't have a gym or resources at my disposal. It's because I'm not inspired now. I'm not motivated now. So when I'm not motivated, I don't do it. So one of the keys to creating sustained change and owning your potential and exploring your potential and seeing what is possible for you in whatever realm of your existence where you're thinking about is your ability to keep doing what works, to be proactive, productive, and effective when you can't be fucked. Mm-hmm. And that I can't be fucked, that's a human condition, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because the idea of everything is easier than the reality of everything, which is why I write things on my social media and sometimes some geniuses go, oh, that's easier said than done. I'm like, well, fucking, of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. Like, I'm going to become a black belt. I can say that all day. But you becoming a black belt, that's like nothing like anything else, you know?
I believe Scott Adams had a term that he used to write after every tweet, which was something like, of course there is obvious exceptions, or of course it is stupid. So everything that you say is always going to be easier said than done. I think you're quite right there.
And you know what? If people, you know, talking about personal growth and all that, I'm the first to say, by the way, it's hard. It isn't easy. And by the way, you know, there are exceptions. And of course, some people have, you know, medical issues or mental health issues or genetic challenges. Of course, I get all of that. But, you know, even in the middle of whatever it is that we deal with, you know, so one of my mates had a horrendous accident 3.5 years ago. They said he would die. He didn't die. Then they said, well, he'll be severely brain damaged and a quadriplegic. And he was in hospital for nearly half a year. And I started training him when he came out of hospital, was never meant to leave hospital. When he came out of hospital, everything broken, like multiple issues. I started training him in a wheelchair with a broomstick. That's all he could lift. And that was 3.5 years ago. And now he's walking with a stick and driving himself to the gym. Now, he has still multiple problems, multiple issues, constant pain, multiple limitations, never complains, right? So even in the deepest, darkest shit, we still get to choose. We still have a choice. What will I do with this? How do I manage me in this? Because we know that bad things happen to good people, and we know that life's not fair, and we know that some people are pricks to us. We know that. Hopefully more people are great to us. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of all of that fairness and unfairness and good and bad and pain and pleasure and suffering and joy, I still get to choose how I talk to people. I still get to choose what I put in my mouth today. I still get to choose whether or not I go to the gym. I still get to choose whether or not I treat this person well or poorly, despite the shit that's going on in my life.
Yeah, good stuff. And just to add to the brighter side of things as well, once you start building that momentum and it becomes a habit and it starts to become your identity, it does start getting easier, in my personal opinion and in my personal experience. I don't know if you've got any comments on that, Craig.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, mate. You're exactly right. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create an operating system behaviorally. Mm-hmm. That is our default setting. So when someone says to me, how do you stay, you know, I started lifting weights when I was 14 and I've probably lifted weights 6 or 7 days a week on average since then, which was obviously 10 years ago. So the challenge for me, just kidding, boys, I'm 57. So that was 43 years ago. So the challenge for me is not, you know, getting to the gym. The challenge for me is just to manage my timetable, you know, and to manage my resources and my energy. So when people say to me, how do you stay motivated to work out? The answer is I don't, because that's literally programmed into my subconscious. So it's like nobody gets up in the morning and debates, well, hopefully very few people, whether or not they're going to clean their teeth or wash their body, exactly. Hopefully. Hopefully none of your listeners anyway. And the reason that we don't need to draw on inspiration to do those things or dig deep and find some motivation is because it's just what we do. It's part of our normal operating system. And there's nothing in my brain that goes, oh, gee, will I clean my teeth today or will I start on Monday, which is the stuff starting day, you know? And so too with exercise. So I say to people, figure out what you think are the ideal behaviors for you based on your values and your goals. And by ideal behaviors, I mean in terms of your best job or your best relationships or your best life or your best health state. And if you want that enough, turn that into a habit. You know, I'm like I said, I'm 57. I've never been drunk. You know why? Because I don't think drinking's great. That's me. A lot of my friends drink and they should. I don't want to drink. I don't want to be drunk. Doesn't appeal to me. Never appealed to me. You know, I've never had a cigarette. I've never been high. I've never done drugs. And I don't think people should be like me at all. I think people should figure out what is right for them. But if I'm saying I want to live in a high-performance body, in a high-performance life, and I want to be a high performer, and I want to explore my potential, and I want to get the best out of me, and I'm going to get shit-faced three times a week, well, I'm full of crap. Right? Like, well, don't tell me about high performance and eat shit because you're a fraud. Absolutely. Don't get pissed. What do you call getting drunk over there?
It is getting pissed over here too.
All right. Yeah. So don't get pissed and fall down and then tell me about your fucking amazing habit. You know, so for me personally, like my biggest asset is me and my biggest problem is me. You know, the only person who can get in my way is me. So I have to make sure that I am an advertisement for what I teach and share, and that I'm authentic, that my behaviors reflect my values. And I don't respect people who say one thing and do another. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are, and by the way, I'm very flawed and I fuck up a lot. So I'm definitely not the high watermark for, you know, amazingness. And I've still got ego and I still do dumb shit and I still fuck up. But as best I can, I live my values. And so, you know, then you wake up one day and you're 57 and, you know, your body is atypical. And my body's not atypical because I've got great genetics, but because I train every day, because I sleep great, because I hydrate well, because I eat well, because I've lifted weights for 43 years, my biological age is much longer, younger than my, or much lower than my chronological age. And that choice everyone has. Mm-hmm. Like you don't need to walk around in a, like literally your body can be biologically younger or older by a long shot, depending on what you do with what you've got.
Love it. Gaz, I will come to you in a second. I've just got one question that falls out of that for me, Harps, and that's you mentioned managing your energy and your resources, and you've probably already touched on it with the hydration, the nutrition, the sleep, etc. But how do you go about managing your energy? Because I think this is a key point in terms of finding, and I don't want to use the term motivation, but it's the best word I've got at the moment. Finding motivation in that moment is often dependent on energy. So how do you go about managing your energy?
Okay, so let's talk about the things that affect energy. So food, stress, hydration, your body's 70% water. Good to see you having a drink right there, Sean.
Yep, right on cue.
Sleep, lifestyle, if I haven't said it already, habits. All of those things affect energy. So
the things that will fuck you up the quickest in terms of your energy and your health, the three things that will fuck you up the quickest in the shortest period of time are poor sleep, stress, and dehydration. Not lack of exercise and not food. Those things matter, of course, but you try and go 3 or 4 days with hardly any sleep, you're going to be close to death. Try and go 3 or 4 days without water, you are going to probably be dead, depending on what else you put in. And then be in a highly stressful environment for a day or two or three. I mean, this shit kills you, you know. So how do I manage my energy and how do I teach people and support people? Recognize how your body and your energy and your mind work optimally for you. So the thing about genetic variability means that Sean and Gareth and Craig don't need the same thing. Well, we don't need the same dose. So I might have 6 hours sleep and I'm great. Sean has 7 and it's still not enough. And Gareth has 8 and it's perfect.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it's not that there's a right number. And not only that, tomorrow all of our numbers might be different because my body is dynamic. It's not static. It's just like I don't need the same number of calories every day because I don't expend the same number of calories every day. So I am very much about helping, encouraging, coaching people to get in touch with their body and their emotions and the deepest, darkest recesses of their mind and perhaps their spirit, and to be present. Because my body, your body, everyone's body is a genius. Like your body doesn't make shit decisions, but your mind does. Like you don't accidentally eat cake, you choose it. You don't accidentally drink piss, you choose it. You don't accidentally have a bad diet. It's a fucking option, right? Your body just suffers the consequences of your stupid fucking decisions.
That's a great quote. Your body doesn't make shit decisions, your mind does.
It doesn't. Your body just is. That's your awesome. Body bears the brunt of those decisions. I've been fat, and I wasn't accidentally fat. I was fat because I made choices and did things which created that result. I put up my hand. And when I say I'm in shape, there's no ego in that because it's just fucking discipline and work and habit, right? So I'm not in good shape because I'm special or genetically gifted. In fact, the opposite. My default setting is what we call endomorphic genes, which is I walk past a donut, my ass gets bigger, right? So I really have to optimize myself. But because I am very unspectacular, because I am very mediocre, it has given me a mindset and a work ethic that helps me do life. And I think if I was really gifted, which I am not, I would have been lazy. So, you know, somebody asked me recently, what's your gift on a podcast? And I said, ironically, my gift is mediocrity because it made me mentally and emotionally strong. It made me resilient.
That's really good stuff. Guys, anything to add on this?
Yeah, Craig, you talked about stress there. And I had a lady come to me last week and she'd just taken so much on from other people. So my question to you is, how do you say no to people? And the second part of that question, how do you say no and not feel guilty about it?
Well, you're not saying no because you're a bad person or you're trying to hurt someone. I mean, I'm quite pragmatic and practical and stoic, not stoic in the, you know, I'm incredibly tough sense, but stoic in the sense that I can't do everything for everyone. I can't be all things for all people. And the reason that I do podcasts like this, and by the way, you've got a great show. I had a look at some of your stuff. Congratulations, boys, and had a look at your website. And I'm not just saying that. It's awesome what you're doing. So well done to you. But is
I can come on and talk with you. I can meet two people that are good guys. We can have an experience which I like, and I can connect with a whole bunch of people, and I can share some thoughts and ideas and stories which hopefully will be of value to people. There's no hook, there's no catch, there's no agenda. I don't have anything to sell. I don't want anything from anyone. I don't want anyone to reach out, and, you know, they can if they want, but it's not what I'm here for. You know, so I think I've digressed. How do I say no? Sorry. I'm okay with it. I don't, you know, I do the very best that I can, but I think it's important, Gareth, that we manage ourselves first, right? And that some people think that sounds selfish. It isn't. The way that I'm talking about it is that if I don't manage myself physically, mentally, and emotionally, then I'm not good at what I do. So I can't be a good coach. I can't write well. I can't be a good student. I can't be a good teacher. I can't help people. If I'm operating myself at 5 out of 10, because I'm trying to be everything for everyone and I'm undernourished or I'm overtrained or I'm overworked or I'm underslept or I'm stressed or I'm fatigued, I've got cognitive fog or whatever, if that's me, then I can't do things well. So I need to start by making sure that it's like driving a car that's falling apart. Doesn't matter what you drive, as long as it runs well, as long as you look after it, as long as you give it, you know, premium petrol, put on good tires, make sure everything's serviced regularly and you look after it so that it can get you where you want to go. Well, so too with your body and your emotions and your mind. We need to really take care of us, not in a selfish way, but rather in an intelligent, strategic way.
Mm. Very good answer. Very good question as well, Gaz. Very Tim Ferriss-esque. I have a good sort of doctrine. I don't know if that's the right word. A mantra that I got from a guy called Gary V, and he says use compassion with candor. And I think that works really well when saying no. Be honest. Be open about your situation, but do it in a compassionate way. Say no in a way. Look, I understand where you're coming from, blah, 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 but I just can't do this because of these reasons. Mm. Good stuff. Anything to add, guys, or Craig, for that matter? Excuse me.
Yeah, I say to people all the time, mate, I literally can't. I do 7 podcasts a week. I work full time. I study full time. I can't. It's not that I don't want to. If I had the time, I probably would. But so it's not, I'm not rejecting you. I literally can't do it. So. Yeah.
I think that's a great approach to take.
And then if somebody gets upset, they get upset, but they're not getting upset because of me. You know, it's because, you can't. And I think, you know, you need to figure out also what is the best use of my time and energy and skills, you know, and it's not, for me, it's not coaching a million people one-on-one. That's not a good use of my time, energy and skills, you know.
Absolutely. Gaz, I can see you scribbling down there.
Anything just another Tim Ferriss quote, because a lot of this stuff, what people try and put onto us is because they haven't planned anything, or they're in a rush all the time and they're trying to put their crap onto you. So the Tim Ferriss quote was, your lack of planning is not my emergency.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. And, okay. You know, I think also... How do I say this? You know, there's a line where, you know, we need to be supportive of people and we need to be understanding and empathetic and kind and hopefully coming from a place of love and awareness. And I mean all of that. That really matters. And I try to do that. But also, we don't want to mollycoddle people for the next 10 years. Like, we don't want to nerf the world. So every time someone grazes their knee, metaphorically, we run over to catch them. It's like you can't become resilient by making your life progressively easier and easier, or trying to make it easier. The irony is, Our life gets more manageable and controllable when we become stronger, not when it gets easier. So the dichotomy is, the funny thing is, where we become a better version of ourselves is when you two are in the garage beating each other up, right? Like, you get better in the middle of that, and that could be directly that, literally that, or it could be a version of that somewhere else. Like, how many podcasts have you guys done now?
We're into 79th, I believe this is.
Yeah, so
not many.
I bet you're way better than number one and two.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right, and yeah, when you get to 100, you'll be a little bit better than now. And by the way, you're both great. But like, you can't become awesome or excellent or proficient or highly skilled at anything that you're not doing. You can't become resilient when you keep avoiding everything that's hard or uncomfortable or scary. So, yeah, we want to support and help people, but also sometimes get the fuck out of the way. Like, oh, okay, that's hard. Oh, you're scared? That's okay. I'm scared too. Like, I'm scared of heaps of shit. I find lots of things uncomfortable. You know, when I started my PhD, it was 20 years, two decades since I'd done any formal study. And I started at 56. And, you know, I call myself the dumbest doctoral student at Monash University where I'm at, right? And my supervisor is the head of neuroscience for Monash Australia. He's a genius.
Wow.
I'm like a fucking plant next to him. Right? I'm like a fucking yucca or a daffodil. Like, I don't even know what he's talking about sometimes, right? Yeah. But I just stop him. I go, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. But that's, you know, so in some environments, I'm relatively capable and intelligent-ish, but in other environments, I'm fucking hell, I've got no idea. But I know that I can't get better at that level of research and academia and writing, academic writing and all that. I can't get better at that without doing it. So I've just got to show up and be uncomfortable. You know, I'm in a year and a half in, and, you know, my competence and understanding and awareness and skill over the last year and a half is, you know, it's been a nice linear progression, and I'm still the dumbest there. But, you know, that's how you evolve. You know, once we stop getting uncomfortable, we stagnate and more often than not go backwards.
Yeah, there's a common question that comes up in a lot of podcasts and a common conversation on podcasts around happiness and what happiness is to people. And I think this is kind of an insidious threat in some ways to actually achieving happiness, because people think happiness is a feeling in the moment, like an excitement or a desire. Whereas I actually get happiness in hard times. So when I'm rolling jiu-jitsu, I find happiness within that moment. And I also find happiness when I'm playing the guitar, when I'm relaxing, when I'm cooking, when I'm with friends and family. So it's not just about rainbows and sunshine. It's about putting yourself into those situations. And I wonder, just to add on to this, Craig, and feel free to add on to what I just said as well, are there any other things that you find creep up on us as a threat to happiness? Something that may be insidious. So, for instance, money, relationships, nice things. People think that this brings happiness, but they don't necessarily. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Okay, so that's back to that duality of the human experience. So, you know, sometimes this is about, you know what I need? You know what I need? You know what's going to make me happy? You know, a better car, a newer, a faster car. You know what I need to do? I need to get more horsepower out of this. I need, it's 500, 550, that would, you know, or whatever, or a bigger telly, or I'm 9% body fat. I need to be 7, or I weigh this. I need to weigh that. And there's nothing wrong, in inverted commas, with buying stuff, owning stuff, changing stuff. But, and again, I don't think I'm an expert at anything, but I'm pretty knowledgeable in this space because I set up Australia's first personal training facility. I wrote the first course and I personally did over 50,000 PT sessions, and I employed 500 plus trainers. So in terms of working with people around this, you know, we we often think that we don't actually think it, but we just somehow believe it without consciously telling us, critically analyzing it, that my internal bullshit will be fixed with a bigger telly. Or if I get biceps, or if I get abs, or if I weigh, you know, 7 stone or whatever it is, or 10 stone or 15 stone, or if I'm earning X, not Y, then I'm going to be better. And there's nothing wrong with hitting a weight or earning a wage or whatever it is. But generally speaking, you know, those emotional and psychological issues don't go away when we get a new telly or when we get a better car or even when we get in shape. We might have a bit more confidence. We might feel a bit better for a bit. But, you know, I remember when this kind of blew me away was I was in my early 20s and I started working with a girl, mid-20s, was one of my first PT clients. And she was a model and with all respect and being politically correct, very attractive professional model. And she used to talk to me about how hideous she was, how ugly she was. And I'm like, oh, I wish I was as ugly as you. You know? I'm like, dude, I go, you know. Yeah. So it's, you know, I think that understanding that I'm not going to, you know, and the other thing too was I was an insecure fat kid and I thought all I need to do is get in shape. I got in shape, then I was an insecure lean kid.
Yeah.
You know, then I got into bodybuilding. I'm like, I'll get huge. That'll fix it. And then I got huge and I had, you know, muscles on my fucking eyelids. And then I was huge and insecure. Mm. You know, it's like the insecurity was there because I wasn't dealing with the issues. I wasn't dealing with the fear or the anxiety or the self-loathing or the self-doubt.
How did you go about dealing with those things, Craig, out of interest?
Trying to recognize and own up to my own stuff. Like, because I was a morbidly obese kid, like my name at school was Jumbo. I was the fattest kid in the school, right? So there were lots of issues there. Mm. And acknowledging what was going on for me and how much I, because I didn't like me, I didn't think I was good enough. And so I was, as a youngster and even a young man, even when from the outside looking in, you wouldn't know because I was a pretty good communicator and a bit chatty and a bit cheeky and all of that. But below that, there was a lot of insecurity and self-doubt and self-loathing and, you know, that feeling of being a fraud. Mm. All of that was, and I just started to own up to it and talk about it. And, you know, and even now I like talking to people about it because I want people to know how not special I am, because I think people find it encouraging when they go, oh, well, he can write books and he can do stuff and he can be on a podcast, he can string a few, he can coach and teach, and he still doesn't have his shit together. Correct. Because if I wait till I've got all my shit together, I'm never going to help anyone.
True.
You know, and by the way, the perfect human does not exist. So I'm better than I was, I think. I think I managed myself better than I did. I think I'm less insecure and less of an overthinker, but am I flawed and, you know, a bit broken? Of course.
Mm-hmm. Did the writing and the podcast and the radio help? Did you journal at all as well or meditate? Did you do any practices that you hear in the health and wellness world?
I did do a lot of writing because I've written a lot. I didn't journal so much as in sitting down, you know, sharing my thoughts into a diary. But I kept a training diary for a very long time, like 20 years, where I'd basically diarize everything that I did to my body or about my body that day. But for me, I found very cathartic and liberating and insightful when I started to try to think about getting what I believed or what I thought out of my head and onto paper or onto a computer screen to share with the world. So the first book I wrote, which was essentially about the psychology of getting in shape, came out of the fact that I realized that changing your body is actually not that much about your body, but nobody teaches that. You know, even now, when we talk about changing a body, we're still all obsessed with micros and macros and fat and sugar and, you know, whatever. And all of those things play a role. But let's say that you've got a personal chef, and let's say you've got all the knowledge about nutrition, and you've got this perfectly prescribed diet, which is prescribed for your genetics. Well, you've still got to manage your mind, because knowing what to do is not doing what you know. And the problem is that people don't eat shit because they don't know. People eat shit because shit tastes good. And well, for them. And it gives them that instant gratification. Of course, people don't go to McDonald's because they hate it. People don't eat chips and fries and cake and burgers and fucking Coke because it tastes shit. For them, it creates a biochemical change in their brain. It produces dopamine. It produces feel-good stuff. And they're like, fucking hell, all I've got to do is drive through the drive-thru, get this, and I'm going to feel shit hot in about 5 minutes. And then I'm going to feel like dog shit about 10 minutes after that, emotionally and psychologically, because I keep doing this to myself. And by the way, I hate myself now again, but I'll probably do it tomorrow because this feeling will pass.
Amen, brother. Amen. Gaz, anything to add?
I'm struggling to construct this question in my mind, so you'll have to forgive me for the way I put it across. Do you think the human experience that we've got doubts, fears, worries, where we're not enough, we need more, do you think if we come to a realization that for the rest of our lives, we're always going to feel like that? Because that's part of the human experience. If we accept that as a truth, do you think we could be more mentally at peace?
Now, that is a great question for someone who couldn't figure out what the fuck they were going to ask. You'd be like, you kind of wooed me in, acting like you've never had a fight, and then you punched me in the face, right? like, I don't know if I can ask this, boom, then you ask the best question.
Bit right. of dirty boxing, yeah.
Yeah, fucking hell. Bit of rope-a-dope. A bit of verbal rubbing, though. So, all right, that is a great question. So here's what I think, and this is just what I think, Gareth. I think that most people, if not all people, for most of their life, if not all of their life, will feel those feelings, that self-doubt, that self-loathing, or that insecurity, or that feeling, I'm a fraud, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not funny enough, I'm not lovable enough. I'm going to get, people are going to find out how broken I am, and then no one will, you know, love me or whatever. So I still have some of those thoughts to, let's say that the scale is 1 to 10, you know, the insecurity and overthinking and self-doubt for me used to be regularly an 8 or 9, and now it's probably closer to a 1 or 2. Depending on if I'm talking to my academic supervisor or not, of course. But here's what I know, which I think is really comforting. What I know is I do a lot of public speaking. I know that I can turn up to a gig in an auditorium with 1,000 people at an all-day event, and I've spoken in front of thousands of live audiences now. My first one was when I was 26. That was 31 years ago. On top of university lecturing, on top of fitness industry lecturing, and lots of professional corporate speaking, right? So I can turn up to a big audience and I'll go up the back and the audio person will wire me up. They'll put on a lapel mic. They'll put the power pack in my pocket. Then the event organizer will come up and tell me the MC is going to introduce you in 3 or 4 minutes or 10 minutes and all that stuff. And so maybe if you just wait at the side of the room, then when he or she introduces you, you walk up, blah, 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 right? And I can be standing at the side of the room just like I have hundreds of times before, about to do a thing, just like I have hundreds of times before, share thoughts and ideas and messages and stories and hopefully create engagement and connection and hopefully inspire a few people to do something. And I can be standing over there and I have this feeling or this idea that comes into my head. It's like, so today's the day you'll fuck up. Like today's the day that everyone will figure out that you are just an awesome actor, but actually a dickhead, right? And I can have this feeling of I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. Still in my 50s, still having done all of those things. But what else is possible is at the same time, while I'm having those feelings, I also intellectually know that I can go and stand in front of 1,000 people and do what I do and do a good job. The reason that I know that is because I have evidence. I have proof. I have history, right? It's not because I think I'm great. It's because I've done it many times. I've done it many times. And not only that, I've actually spoken to this audience and now I'm back because I did a good job the first time. So what I'm saying is that the feelings of inadequacy can coexist with the knowledge that I am adequate. Not only am I adequate, I'm more than adequate. So people who are high performers, high achievers in whatever endeavor or field, they are not without self-doubt. They might act like it, but that's bullshit. I've never met anyone who has zero self-doubt about something. They might be extremely confident in one thing, but, you know, absolutely terrified or insecure when it comes to another environment, another task or another situation. So that is a good question. So I do think that most of us will feel that way. And you know what, Gareth, honestly, and Sean, honestly, I feel like it's a good thing. I feel like it's a good thing in that it keeps me grounded. I don't want to get to the point where I have no fear. I don't want to get to the point where I don't doubt myself a little bit, because I think that would make me worse. I think I would try less. I think I would work less. Because I'm innately aware of my mediocrity, and I don't say that with false humility. I know I've got some skill and knowledge and I know I can communicate. I get all of that. But all of that is just shit that I've developed through work and time. But my default genetics, my default potential, my default talent, my default level of intelligence, not spectacular at all.
So it keeps you sharp. Awesome. We're just breaking the hour mark, fellas. So, Craig, thank you for joining us. I've got a couple of very quick fire questions, if you don't mind answering them, and then we'll start wrapping up.
All good.
Number one, are there any principles or life lessons that you live by?
Walk my talk, you know, live my values. Like come from a place of love.
Super.
I always say to people, I tried selfishness. I gave that a good go for a long time. It didn't work. So, you know, you still got to take care of yourself. But I think if I'm, you know, I make enough money, my life is okay, my business is good, I'm not driven by money. Mm-hmm. So if I was driven by money, and I don't mean this sound weird, but I wouldn't do things like this. Like, we'll probably never meet each other in person, be good if we did. Yeah. But I just do this because I think it's a good thing to do. And I like, you know, I like talking and sharing ideas.
Great answer. Number two, are there any resources, and by resources, I mean books, podcasts, videos, films, etc., that you either gift, recommend, or refer back to often?
Literally, I could give you 100 books, but I've got books in front of me. I'll give you a couple that that I like. So Robert L. Greene wrote a book called The 48 Laws of Power,
yeah,
which was the biggest, maybe still is the biggest selling book in the American prison system. It's actually fascinating. It's about the psychology of manipulation, power, control, influence. But, you know, you read it in a way where it's your understanding how this works, not so that you can become dastardly and evil. And it's incredibly well written with lots and lots of stories and kind of the extrapolations of those stories. I love that book. I also love a book by a lady called Dr. Lissa, L-I-S-S-A Rankin, R-A-N-K-I-N. And her book is called Mind Over Medicine. And that is a fascinating book about the way that our mind manipulates and controls our body in a very, very real way. We in Western culture, we treat the mind and the emotions and the body quite separately, but the fact is they're one system. They're components of one system, which is the human system. So, I love that. We can literally change our physiology with our mind. And if people are going, oh, hang on, that's bullshit, let me give you a quick example. Do we have time or no?
Of course we go. Fire away.
So, if, for example, now let's say Gareth thinks for some reason he hears some noise in the room next door and he thinks that it's somebody that's going to do him harm. Now let's say in reality there's no one there, but he doesn't know that, but he thinks someone's there and he hears like what he thinks is some scratching or some movement, or then all of a sudden within a short period of time he's telling himself a story about who's there, and the person that's there is 6'5" with an axe and got terrible intentions. And
it's me ready for him and the mats.
That's right. Then all of a sudden he's telling himself this story of doom and gloom. So this is a complete cognitive construct. Now, if he believes his own story, which most people do, now the emotional system comes in, which is anxiety and fear and a few other emotions. And then the biological system, which is sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight, adrenaline, cortisol, norepinephrine, endocrine system, cardiovascular system, respiratory system, blood pressure's up, breathing's up, heart rate's up. All these things are happening in his body, not because there's any danger, but because he thought there was a danger. He thought. There is no danger. It's a totally self-created stress state. Now, he can do that in about 1 to 10 seconds, right? So if you go, wow, I can literally change the biochemistry of my body and my heart rate and my blood pressure and my nervous system just with a thought, you go, well, fuck, what else can I do with a thought? So that book, Mind Over Medicine, is about a heap of interesting shit. So there's that.
Sounds awesome. And
then, yeah, there are a few podcasts, but, you know, Joe Rogan, we love Joe Rogan. You can't go wrong with Joe Rogan.
Can't, can you? It is a good podcast. Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss is pretty much my go-to.
Your go-to?
Yeah. Last one then. What's one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made? And this could be time, money, energy, etc.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, what's one of the best investments I've ever made?
Or most worthwhile?
I've never been asked that question. I guess this sounds naff, but it's true. I guess for me, opening the personal development door for me, you know, to challenge myself to learn and grow and face my fears and, you know, to grow in that way, you know, because I had a very comfortable life in inverted commas when I went deep. And I actually went deep even though my life was comfortable, because in the middle of that really comfortable life, I wasn't particularly happy. And so I had a moment where I went, well, I'm ticking all these boxes and from the outside in, I'm successful, but the inside out experience is not that of success. Mm-hmm. And it's like I met the criteria. I had a good business. I had a good brand. I had staff. I had lots of staff, you know, I was in shape, you know. And I'm like, well, how come with all my great shit, in the middle of all that shit, I'm an emotional and psychological train wreck? What's that about? And that was kind of for me when I started to do a deep dive. And that, from then till now, which was probably 27 years ago, that's been very worthwhile.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a new song come out and it's called Introvert. And I'm just Googling quickly the singer. I can't remember what the singer's name is, but there's a line in that that goes, I'm close to success, but from happiness, I'm the furthest. And that really hit home with me. And it sort of resembles what you were just saying there.
Well, that's for another podcast, boys, but that's really interesting that idea. Are you running out of time or something?
I know. No, we've got all day, mate. So it's on you.
Let me share one more thing, which I think is valuable.
Okay.
So we grow up, most of us, in this paradigm that teaches us, either directly or indirectly, that success is about what you have and what you earn and what you own and where you live and what you drive and what people think of you, right? All external stuff. And the problem with that is we're not addressing anything internal. Now, of course, there's nothing wrong with money and cars and stuff, nothing at all. But it depends from where we get our identity. And when you get your identity from your body or your money or your business or your brand or your stuff, you will always be insecure because that shit can disappear. It can deteriorate. It can go away. It can break. And so, The philosophical and, dare I say, spiritual challenge is to figure out who we are beyond what we're not. Who we are, who I am beyond my things. And what Craig Harper is not is a body. And what I'm not is a bank balance. And what I'm not is a podcast. And what I'm not is a car or a house or a brand or a bit. I'm none of that. I'm none of that. And this is the great shit right here is like, where am I and who am I and what am I about? You know, and for me, that's where you're getting to the core of what it is to be human, to become self-aware, which is my research for my PhD is self-awareness, and to start to become conscious in the middle of what is a largely unconscious world. That's where the great stuff lives.
Oh, mate. Awesome. Very, very good. The song, if anyone's interested, is Introvert by Little Sims, and Sims is spelled S-I-M-Z. It's not everyone's taste, but it's musical and lyrical and artistic genius. So it's worth a listen and a watch to the video.
What's it called again?
It's Introvert by Little Sims, S-I-M-Z. Watch the video and listen to the song. It's, as I said, it's not for everyone's taste, but there's a lot going on there that's worth watching and listening to. Gaz, any final thoughts from you? There's so much we didn't get to talk to Craig. Hopefully we get to do this again in terms of what you're studying. I had a question down the line of psychedelics, potentially, communication, self-awareness. So hopefully we'll get chance to get together again. But Gaz, any final thoughts?
Yeah, Craig. I'd just like to thank you because I'm going to be in fight or flight for the rest of the week because I'm going to be thinking of Sean, like Kato from the Pink Panther films. So as I'm walking around my day, Sean's going to jump out my wardrobe and attack me unawares with an axe. So I'd just like to thank you for that, Craig.
Mate, you're welcome. I'm glad I switched on your sympathetic nervous system. You're producing cortisol like a fucker right now. And you need to meditate tonight, mate, and just switch all that off.
Very good. Very good, fellas. Craig, have you got any final thoughts that you want to leave with our viewers? Where can people find you? What you're doing now? Any challenges for the future, etc.?
Yeah. Okay. So firstly, thank you, boys, for having me. Let's do another one in a month or so. Just reach out again. If you want, we'll do another one. I'm happy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What do I want to tell you? I just want to encourage everyone to have a go. You know, it's like we don't need to be special. We don't need to be genetically gifted. We don't need to be 25 years old to get shit done. You know, one of my friends is a 73-year-old psychiatrist
Her name's Dr. Ingrid Nielsen. She'd be great for your show. She's a straight-up gangster. And she started training and getting fit and strong and healthy at 65. You know, so what's my thought is, so most people, everyone who's heard this has just heard an hour of theory or so, but transformation lives in the application of the information, the doing, not just the knowing. So it's great to hear. It's great to know. It's great to understand. But if you are one of those people that goes, that thinks I really need to, or I want to change my life or my thinking or my habits or my behaviors or my results, that I would encourage you, even if it's not convenient, to start today. In fact, sometimes starting in the middle of what is not the, in inverted commas, ideal time is the best time. Because, you know, the best time is a fallacy. You know, some people have been waiting for the best time or the right time for a decade. And it's not about timing, it's about thinking. So when we find a reason rather than an excuse, then, you know, we'll step into it and we'll start to, you know, use our potential and not waste it. In terms of other stuff, you know, craigharper.net is my website. Craigharper.net. The U Project is my podcast. And if you want to follow me on Insta, it's at Whiteboard Lessons, all one word, at Whiteboard Lessons. And yeah, that's that. And boys, thanks for having me. You're good blokes. I enjoyed it.
Likewise. Appreciate it. Thank you for making the time. You don't have to do this. So yeah, we appreciate you. And thanks for coming on. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, boys. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Craig. Take care. Thanks, boys. Take care.